This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. African Americans have had a crucial role in shaping American history and society since before our nation's founding. In the 20th century, one of the forms that took was in what came to be known as the Great Migration. Over the course of about 60 years, millions of black Americans left the South, making their way to places like New York City, Washington, D.C., and Chicago. Henry Louis Gates Jr. talks about that in his newest PBS series, Great Migrations.
If there was one city in particular that symbolized the promised land for black migrants, it was Chicago, Illinois.
And the ultimate heaven, of course, was Chicago. The maximum heaven.
Chicago was a big manufacturing city. They had everything, railroads, stockyards, factories.
The pages of The Defender portrayed Chicago as welcoming, safe, and vibrant, a land of opportunity.
Along with Gates there, we heard from Vernon Jarrett, who arrived in Chicago in 1946, and historian Eric Foner. The series as a whole looks at the role movement has played in black history, especially in the 20th and 21st centuries. The four-part documentary recently finished airing. You can watch all the episodes on the PBS website and YouTube. We'll have a link on our website, 21stshow.org. For the rest of the program today, we're going to talk about this history and the way it runs through Illinois, especially during the first wave of the Great Migration. With me to talk about this are two of the experts featured in the series. William Jones is a professor and associate chair in the Department of History in the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Minnesota. Professor Jones, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
And Kenesha Grant is an associate professor of political science at Howard University in Washington, D.C. She's written a book on this topic. It's called The Great Migration and the Democratic Party, Black Voters and the Realignment of American Politics in the 20th Century. Professor Grant, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you have questions about this history we're talking about, you can join the conversation as ever at 800-222-9455. Maybe your family has connections to the Great Migration. We'd love to hear your story. 800-222-9455. All right, Professor Jones, I'm going to start with you. When we talk about this, it's generally in the context of, you know, one big movement, the Great Migration. But there's so much nuance in history to get into here. Maybe you can just talk about some of the shapes and some of the forms this movement took over time.
Yeah, happy to. I mean, I think, you know, there's a long history of African Americans living in the North, in the urban North, and in Chicago going back to the 19th century. There's a small after the Civil War, there's a small movement, of African Americans moving from the South after the Civil War. But what we call the Great Migration really had its first wave starting in the years leading up to and really peaking during World War I. And that's often known as the sort of first wave of the Great Migration. But actually, the larger migration was surrounding World War II. So the two world wars, in some ways, for the same reasons, for the changes in the labor market, and the sort of international situation drove big waves of migration. So, but they're really, yeah, around the First and the Second World War are the two largest points of the Great Migrations.
Interesting. So let's go back then, though. So before we get to that, you mentioned you started with talking about how after the Civil War, more than 90% of Black Americans lived in the South at that time. There was emancipation, I don't know if there's a sense of opportunity there, lack of opportunity. What drives that very initial wave?
Well, yeah, I mean, shortly after the Civil War, there's a couple of things that I think work to keep most African Americans in the South. One is that there is a political opening and political opportunity. African Americans are voting in much of the South in the 1860s and 1870s. There's economic success. They're gaining access to land and to jobs. And so that, you know, I mean, so African Americans do start, you know, they move around, they enjoy the freedom that they get as a result of the emancipation, but for the most part, most stay in the South. Those who do move to places like Chicago move to, you know, for reasons of wanting to be in bigger cities for economic opportunities. But it's the combination of a couple of things that start to lead to what we might think of as a mass migration. One is the solidification of Jim Crow, the elimination of voting rights for African Americans and political rights, the consolidation of segregation, of legalized segregation, in the South. And the perception among many African Americans that they had sort of lost the struggle for political equality in the South. One of the things that you see in Chicago is the Chicago Defender, which is an African American newspaper, initially, you know, sort of encourages African Americans to stay in the South and to fight for equality. But as time goes on and that equality becomes increasingly difficult to imagine, the editorial position of the newspaper shifts more toward encouraging Black people to move to places like Chicago to find both economic and political opportunity.
Professor Grant, can you pick up on that point of politics in the immediate post-Civil War period? And I'm struck because here in Illinois, of course, we had Carroll Moseley Braun, who was the, people would say, the first African American senator since Reconstruction, right? There's always that asterisk when people talk about those milestones, even today, when it comes to the Congress. So talk a little bit more about that era in American politics and in African American politics in particular.
Yeah, the Great Migration creates a scenario where people, in some ways, go from a situation where they cannot participate in politics in the South, where there are various barriers to their voting, very high barriers to their voting, to living in a place like Chicago, where there are still some barriers, but the barriers are much lower. So they have the opportunity to participate, to register to vote, to participate through voting, and to hold elected office. We also have a situation in Chicago where the housing is segregated, as has been mentioned already, and that the political seats or the jobs that people have in politics are based on where a person lives. So, because we have these deeply segregated parts of the city, and this is not just a thing that happens in Chicago, but I think happens is best exemplified by Chicago. But because we have these very segregated parts of the city and these political seats that represent these segregated parts of the city, Black people in Chicago start getting elected to political offices a little bit earlier than we see them getting elected to political offices in other places. So we have them getting elected to the state legislature really early in the 1800s, in the late 1800s. We have them getting elected to the city council. We have them getting elected to the Congress, even. And so we see that Black folks are able to exert some political power through their voting and through demands that they make on white politicians as well, which is something that I talk about in my book, but through their own work to make the world different through their political positions, not to mention all the things that happen outside of formal politics through their activism in places like churches. I think about QuinAME, for example, as a place where Black people are doing organizing to make it the case that they have a community that works for them.
And it's interesting. I mean, what you're describing almost sounds like just, you know, Chicago was a city of ethnic politics in a lot of ways at the time. And Black Americans were able to be another sort of ethnic group competing for power and competing for, you know, resources or however you want to frame it that way.
Yes, I think that's a great way to frame it. It's a city of ethnic politics. It's a city where the political party matters a ton. It's a city where the mayor of the city matters, and the mayor is functionally the leader of the Democratic Party in most of this story. And so we have a Democratic Party that has organized itself, but then has a separate sub-machine politics happening for Black people, which is not usually a good thing for them, in that they can't activate much of what they want because they have to work within this party system. But yes, you are right that they are part of a broader ecosystem of ethnic politics in that area.
All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the history and legacy of the Great Migration. Over the course of the 20th century, millions of Black Americans moved from the South, particularly to urban areas across the country, including and especially places like Chicago. This is all the subject of a new documentary on PBS called Great Migrations by Henry Louis Gates. We're talking with two of the experts featured in that documentary series, Professor Kenesha Grant from Howard University in Washington, D.C., and Professor Will Jones at the University of Minnesota. You can join us today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We're going to take a short break. We'll continue this conversation in a moment here on The 21st Show. Please stay with us.
To Chicago, I'm sorry, but I can't take you. I come from Chi-Town. Chi-Town is my town. Going to Chicago, sorry, but I can't take you. I've got to quit you.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. That's the late, great Joe Williams. The song is Going to Chicago Blues. We're talking about the many African-Americans who went to Chicago in the early 20th century as part of the Great Migration. That's all the subject of a new PBS series, Henry Louis Gates' Great Migrations. And we're going through some of that history with two of the experts who are featured in the series, Professor Will Jones from the University of Minnesota and Professor Kenesha Grant from Howard University in Washington. You can join us today at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, Professor Jones, before the break, you mentioned the Chicago Defender. And one, I think you can argue that Robert Abbott, who was the founder and publisher of the Defender, played a very significant role in the Great Migration. We actually have some tape from the documentary series. This is Henry Louis Gates talking with Maite Sengstack Rice, who's Abbott's great-grandniece. Let's listen to that.
He saw that Chicago seemed like a land of opportunity, and he decided that he was going to move there. He wanted to be an attorney. He found it was a little difficult for a Black man to be an attorney at that time, and so he was taught by his stepfather that the pen is your sword. Uh-huh. And so, therefore, he turned around and decided that he was going to start a newspaper.
All right, so Professor Jones, just talk a little bit more about the sort of news and information ecosystem, as we might call it today, for Black communities as the Great Migration is happening.
Right. Well, particularly in northern cities, you have the birth of Black newspapers that become, you know, like there's the Chicago Defender, there's the Baltimore Afro-American, the Amsterdam News, which was published out of Harlem in New York City. And they become something of, you know, national newspapers, the way, you know, people may read the New York Times, for example, not just in New York, but across the country. And they all played a really important role in the migration, I think, in a number of ways. One was, I think, the Defender was the most pronounced of this, but playing a very active role in encouraging African Americans to go to the North and to say, to make this in something of a social movement or a political movement, to say this is where, how we can find and fight for freedom and take advantage of the opportunities that that exist in northern cities. To find jobs, to take advantage of the political situation, and build power for African Americans, not just in Chicago or in New York, but something that could have a nationwide impact and start to affect the status of African Americans in the South. The other way in which I think they played an important role was just sort of championing the Black culture in northern cities, you know, publicizing the writing of African Americans, the music of African Americans, the film and radio that again, you know, they helped to spread that around the country and to create a market for these cultural pieces.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Paul is calling from Urbana. Paul, thanks for calling in.
I'm just thinking that Ida B. Wells writing in the Defender and other papers about the lynching that was going on in the South, the anti-lynching campaign should be right up front. I don't know if it was in the documentary, but there was terror during the Jim Crow era. And it wasn't just attractions of the North and the opportunities. It was people were fleeing. Shouldn't that be like right in the front of the conversation? Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call, Paul. Professor Grant, I'll ask you to take that. Obviously, there is the pull of the North, but there is a push out of the South as well.
Yes, that's 100% accurate. When we talk about the Great Migration, we talk about both push and pull factors. And so it is the case that many of the people who are leaving the South are doing so under duress. They're not all leaving in a very contemplative way where they are thinking about it over the course of months. Some of them are leaving because they have to leave like today. And so absolutely that is the case that that's happening. It's also the case that some of them work in agriculture, for example, and the agricultural crops are changing. So they might be sharecropping and barely making a living as a sharecropper. And then we have boll weevil that hits and makes it impossible for them to earn the little bit of money that they could earn as a sharecropper. It's also the case that Black people had a notion of themselves as full citizens who should be able to participate in politics and other parts of American civil society completely. And so some of them leave because of those kinds of things that they are facing and their inability to participate as full citizens in the South. But caller, you're 100% correct that terror is a part of this story, too.
So we did talk about, and I think, you know, the documentary focuses a lot on this idea of land of opportunity. And maybe, Professor Grant, you could just talk a little bit more about that, particularly as it comes to, you know, labor is the story of labor in America. Chicago is a big part of that. And Black labor is a big part of that story in particular.
Yeah, when we think about some of the pull factors, things that are drawing people to the North, one of the things that we start with is this idea that they seek to make a living. And when we think about, you haven't asked about this yet, but when we think about return migration, another thing that Black people are thinking about is what is their economic future like? And so, as I mentioned, it's a tenuous situation trying to make a living as a sharecropper on land that you don't own from an employer who may not be trustworthy, who may not pay you what you have put into their company. And so Black people try to find a way to make a better life. And among the ways they seek to make a better life is to work in order to earn enough money to make the world different for their own lives and for the lives of the children and the people that come behind them. And so we see them moving to places like Chicago for work and other places in the North. We see them moving to Detroit to work for Henry Ford, who promises $5 a day and ends up paying equal pay for equal work. They often, in these situations, Black people end up in situations where they have like the dirtiest jobs or the worst jobs that are available at a place, but in some instances, they still get the equal pay rate that a white person working in the community might get, or something that will be much more than they would make if they were earning a living in the South. And so for that reason, we see them moving. We see women coming to the North and taking positions as secretaries or maids or other things that might not have been available to them in the same kind of way, phone operators, in the South as it is for them in the North.
Professor Jones, we have only about 7 minutes left and so much more to talk about. Maybe we should skip ahead a little in the story to, I do want to touch on, you know, we've talked about redlining and segregation, Jim Crow being alive and well in the North as well as the South. Let's talk though specifically about what happens in 1919. World War I is over. People are coming back. There is rising tension. How does that manifest in Chicago in particular?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's true that there was some of the opportunities were created, particularly during the wartime, by opportunities for employment. The war disrupted migration from Europe, and it, you know, Chicago was a city that had for decades relied very heavily upon European migration. And so African Americans found opportunities in a lot of the manufacturing jobs that they had previously been shut out of. But as the war came to an end, I think there was a lot of question as to whether they were going to keep those jobs and whether people who had gone away for the war, who came back, were going to replace them. There was a lot of tension over labor. Also, just there was housing shortages after the war, and tensions over the, you know, the increased presence of African Americans in a city that remained very hostile to them. And that sort of blew up in a really horrific riot in 1919, which involved white mobs, you know, going through the city, attacking Black people on transit on the streets, and you know, several days of really horrific violence in the city. I think one thing that I think that violence exposed that I've recently written about was the way in which, because African Americans were unable to move around the city, they weren't able to go to their jobs. And many places, particularly city operations, so the street repair, garbage collection, in the city hall, the elevator operators, none of them could go to work. And that actually shut down the city, and I think in a really kind of paradoxical way showed the way in which a city that was tremendously hostile to these new migrants had grown completely dependent upon the labor of those migrants.
That's fascinating. You know, I do want to touch on one other thing Professor Kenesha Grant, you had mentioned, which is, I can't remember if the phrase you used is reverse migration or how you've described that. We've talked on the show, it was a few years ago now, but about a significant share of Black Chicagoans have left the city now. They've gone to Indiana, Texas, Georgia, Arizona. Can you talk about, you know, the legacy of the Great Migration and how, you know, things are changing today and how things are different today in the current political climate?
Yeah, we haven't really settled on a term yet. So I use return migration, but reverse migration is also fine. When we think about movement of Black people today, I think about it in at least two ways. There is a reshaping of American cities such that gentrification is changing what it means to be an urban center and who lives in that urban center. And we're seeing some populations of individuals who might historically have chosen suburbs choosing inner cities now, which reshapes how those cities work, who lives in those cities and makes them less Black than they used to be. And it is also the case that some of these same places are facing displacement. So the people who might still have property and or live in the central cities are being moved out of the central cities as the cities are being reimagined. And then we also have this migration of people who are going to the South from the North. And so both these kinds of migration are impacting where Black people find themselves. So an individual might have grown up in Chicago and choose to leave Chicago and go to some place in Indiana, which is not very far from where they were, but is a place that's now affordable if Chicago is no longer affordable. Or they might make the larger leap to leave Chicago and go to Houston or go to Atlanta or go to Miami or some other place that seems like it might be better for them. And so we're in the early stages of figuring out what this means politically, because you can see some of it, and we talked about some of it in the documentary. For example, we might have thought about Georgia as being a Republican stronghold in which we would always expect that Republicans control that state in one statewide office. But Stacey Abrams makes the calculation in at least 2018 that it might be possible to win that state because the demographics have changed tremendously. And so I think that we will continue to see that kind of evolution in places like Georgia, in a place like Texas, in a place like North Carolina, where Black people are moving in larger numbers in a way that we all know and feel, but that we probably won't have books about until the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, of course, Abrams doesn't quite make it, but Raphael Warnock does. She builds a political organization, and he does a few years later. We're going to have to leave it there. What a fascinating topic. If people want, again, if you want to check out the entire documentary, it's available now on PBS's website, YouTube. You can also find it on the PBS Passport app. And my guests for this conversation have been featured in that documentary. They are William Jones, professor in history from the University of Minnesota, and Kenesha Grant, professor of political science at Howard University in Washington. Professor Jones, Professor Grant, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today on The 21st Show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Again, and I should also mention Professor Grant's book on this topic is called The Great Migration in the Democratic Party, Black Voters and the Realignment of American Politics in the 20th Century. If you want to take a deeper dive for that, if you want to catch the PBS series, again, that's available now on YouTube, Passport, etc. That is all the time we have for our show today. Coming up tomorrow, we are going to talk about Governor Pritzker's State of the State speech this week. That was the big political Illinois political news of the week. He drew parallels between the Nazis in the 1930s and what some of the things the Trump administration, some of the movements in America that are happening today. We're going to talk about that. Plus, catch up on the latest news from Washington with our correspondent there, Linda Kenyon. The 21st Show is produced by Anna Casey, Christine Hatfield, and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producer is Coulson Kahn. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. And Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.